You might not know it just from the lesson, but when Jesus talks about the truth and the truth setting you free, the reference may very well be to the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. In Jewish tradition, the Law of Moses, also called in Hebrew the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, are capital T truth. That was the way you judged how you lived your life in the world. And if you think about it, it makes good sense. The Ten Commandments are found there. All of the Ten Commandments are actually found twice there in Exodus and in Deuteronomy. All the ceremonial laws are found there. The stories that we are very familiar with from Adam and Eve to Abraham. The stories of Joseph and his amazing dreams. Isaac, Jacob, all of the Exodus, the crossing of the Red Sea. So when Jesus says that if you follow my teaching, you really will be my disciples, then you will know the truth and the truth will set you free, Jesus is showing us that the truth not only resides in the first five books of the Bible, but the truth also has a human face. And that face is Jesus' face. If you hold to my teachings, you really are my disciples. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. This is rather remarkable because for any Jew to say this, hold to my teachings, it would really have to be consistent with the first five books of the Bible. For Jesus to say this, he would have to be saying that my teachings are in line with what Moses wrote in the first five books of the Bible, what God revealed to Moses in the first five books of the Bible. And Jesus does this throughout his ministry and throughout his teachings. Remember when Jesus says, I come not to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. He's talking about how to interpret what goes on in the first five books of the Bible. So what are some of the teachings that he is calling the Pharisees to hold on to? This seems like a non-controversial kind of thing. But we know that the Pharisees are getting more and more angry at Jesus. They're angry because they tried to trick him last week with the stoning of the woman caught in adultery. They tried to trick him into saying something that would be inopportune and they could charge him with something. And now they're getting angry because Jesus is putting his teachings on a level with capital T truth and Torah and the traditions of the Jewish faith. So, knowing the Pharisees' rising anger at him, could Jesus have meant his teachings on anger? That one of his ways you could follow him, one of the ways you could follow truth, is to pay attention to his teachings on anger. Jesus has a lot to say about anger. In Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 23, the Sermon on the Mount, you have heard it was said to people long ago, do not murder. And anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother or sister will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother or sister, rakah, which is a Hebrew word for insults, is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fires of hell. That's pretty remarkable when you think about it, because Jesus is talking about one of the Ten Commandments, do not murder, but he pushes it further than just saying, don't murder somebody, don't raise up your hand against somebody, but rather, what is your intention? What's in your heart? And Jesus says, if you follow my teachings, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the pastor who we heard from last week, who opposed the Nazis, interpreted this passage very interestingly. He drew a real interesting connection. He says, this is Jesus indeed drawing from the Ten Commandments and then bringing it up to his traditions of that day and then giving it to us as his disciples. So there's three movements here. There's the original command, you shall not murder. Then there's Jesus saying, examine your own assumptions, examine your own heart. That's the second move. And then the third move is, how do we live it today? And this is what Bonhoeffer thought the genius of Jesus was on this. And I don't normally quote long passages, but I think it's interesting what Bonhoeffer wrote and how he looked at this. He said that to understand the command against murdering and the command against getting angry, that Jesus wants us to understand that the reason we don't get angry at people is not because they don't do things that make us angry, that we do things just because we like them. We do things just because they're nice people. But rather, you know that somebody's going to make you angry. You know that somebody is going to frustrate you. You know there is someone who will make you say, "You fool." But Jesus wants us not to be angry because God's heart is not angry. The Pharisees are angry with Jesus and they're ready to say, "You're a fool, Jesus." They're angry and want to persecute his disciples and others who aren't able to see things from the same perspective as the Pharisees. They want to say Jesus is a fool. And yet Bonhoeffer says, the reason we refrain from calling someone a fool, the reason we refrain from murdering is not because we particularly like that person. It's not because they particularly are worthy, but rather because God is particularly worthy. God's heart is not an angry heart. And here's the quote. He says, quote, "Intentional words of derision rob sisters and brothers of their dignity in public. They intend to make other people despise them as well. They aim in hatred to destroy another's internal and external existence. That is murder." So you can see here, Bonhoeffer saying that the gossip that's going on behind Jesus' back is one of the things that leads to murder and to anger. Further on in the quote, "So the community of Jesus' disciples ought to examine itself as to whether it is here and there at fault towards sisters and brothers, and whether, for the sake of the world, it has participated in hating, despising, and humiliating others. To do these things is to be guilty of their murder. Jesus' community today ought to examine whether at the moment it enters God's presence for prayer and worship, many accusing voices rise up between it and God and hinder its prayers. Jesus' community ought to examine whether it has given a sign of Jesus' love which preserves, supports and protects lives to those whom the world has despised and dishonored. Otherwise, the most correct form of worship, the most pious prayer, and the bravest confession will not help, but will give witness against it because it has ceased following Jesus." End quote. That's harsh words for the disciples. That's harsh words for the Pharisees. That's harsh words for us today. Because by holding to Jesus' teaching, not just believing in Jesus, this came up this morning in Bible study. In one translation from the King James, it says, "Abide in my word." But in our translation that we heard a few moments ago, it's you have to hold to Jesus' teaching. It's not just about believing that Jesus is a nice guy or that Jesus is right or nodding our heads, but rather it's about holding on to his teaching. So when Jesus says you're to forgive 70 times 7 times, he means it. Or when Jesus says to turn the other cheek and love the neighbor as yourself and feed my sheep, that's not a sometimes kind of thing, but Bonhoeffer says that's an all the time kind of thing. And that's how the church will change the world. And that's how freedom is available to us. You see, the Pharisees, they forgot their history. They forgot that they were supposed to live. One of the reasons the Pharisees got created, and it was a genius idea. You know, the Pharisees are often the bad guys in these stories, and they weren't meant to be. But the reason the Pharisees got created is they were supposed to demonstrate with their lives how great the law was. That they were supposed to demonstrate by living out that teaching of the first 5 books of the Bible, how great the law was. And everyone should look at the Pharisee and then say, "I want to be like that. How can I do that?" But that's not what it became. Human nature being what it is, the Pharisees got angry with people who were kind of lazy. They got angry with people who weren't kind of like them. They could have done it. You could have done it. You could have been a Pharisee, but you just decided not to. And you're not as good as me. You decided not to because of your own family situation. So you're not as special as I am. And so the Pharisees, some of them, looked around and said, "You know what? You don't cut it with us. And so rather than their witness being a bold, bright, shining star, their witness was, I'm better than you are. I work things out better than you do. And that's not freedom. That's being enslaved to your own ego. The Pharisees try and say in verse 33, we've never been slaves of anyone. But they've forgotten that if the Torah is that important, if the Bible is that important to them, well, what's the most important story in the first five books of the Bible? It's the Exodus. It's when the people of God are rescued from slavery by God. They've forgotten that they were slaves in Egypt. And now they're slaves in Rome, that Rome has them under their thumb. Truth and freedom is staring them in the face, in Jesus' face. And they can't see the truth for who he is. They can't see his miracles setting people free because instead they're too concerned that he's doing it in the wrong way. That when Jesus heals somebody, he's done it on the wrong day or in the wrong spot or the wrong person. Why didn't he pick my grandmother instead of that grandmother? Why didn't he pick a better time, a better place, a better day? They can't see his teaching, even though he's building on Abraham and Moses. They can't see his truth staring them right in the face. So Bonhoeffer says there's the Old Testament things, thou shalt not murder, and then Jesus puts it in a new context, don't get angry, and then we're supposed to live it out in a new way. We're supposed to live out the truth in a new fashion. And I want to share you that new fashion, a story that I think sort of touches on it, about how truth can bring people together and not apart. Because this story is about truth pulling people apart. But Jesus says the truth will put you back together and set you free. There was a missionary in Kenya named Sylvia. Sylvia was a Mennonite Christian. And they have missionary stuff all over the world. Mennonites are everywhere all over the world. Sylvia went to visit the home of a woman named Asha. And Asha's job, like a lot of women worldwide, she had many jobs. Whatever she could do to make money, she tended a cornfield, a small cornfield in the back. She was very good at weaving, so she wove baskets and mats to sell at market. She also dried spices, which she could sell at market. And Sylvia and Asha met together, Sylvia being a missionary and Asha working and weaving one of her mats. And they were having small talk. It was nothing big and exciting. Sylvia, this Mennonite, was asking questions of Asha, who was a devout Muslim. And Asha was surprised to learn, and I was surprised to learn this too, I didn't quite realize this, that both Christians and Muslims both believe in the truth of the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. And if we wanted to, we could add Jews to that list as well. The Jewish people, I already talked about that with the truth, capital T, in John chapter 8. But Jews, Christians, and Muslims all believe in the truth of the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. And when Asha and Sylvia started talking, they realized that both of them reverenced Abraham. Both of them held Abraham up as one of their ancestors in the faith. And Sylvia realized, and Asha realized, that in Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, it says that all peoples on earth will be blessed through Abraham. And Abraham, in a very real sense, is revered and honored in Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. The truth brought these two women together. Jesus' truth set them free. Amen.